Welcome to Mobile Estate Planning with your host, Michael Bailey. Over a decade ago, attorney Michael Bailey turned his attention to estate law after he recognized the unacceptable number of adults without proper end-of-life planning. Michael recognizes that many of his clients have difficulty finding the time for making a proper estate plan. That's why he became the Mobile Estate Planner. He will go to wherever you are to assist you with your estate planning, including writing wills, trusts, and giving you the information you need to avoid probate. Now, ATX, Ask the Experts, presents Mobile Estate Planning with your host, Michael Bailey.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ, The Source, where we're planning so we don't leave your family just alone. Glad to be here. Glad to be with you. Phone number to talk to us on the air is 303-477-5600. And my direct line is 720-394-6887. So I was meeting with a client this morning, and that was a client, and her and his son was there, and so we were just about to, we kind of finished up talking about what we needed to do, and I handed them my engagement letter to read and to sign, and guy's like, oh, I don't know, do I really need to do this? So the son turned to me and said, so perhaps you can explain a bit better what happens if you don't do anything. So I'm like, well, sure, I can explain that. So I gave him a two-minute explanation of what happens if you don't do any estate planning. And it went something like this. Well, the state has written an intestate statute, which means to die without a will. It's between 50 and 55 pages long. So what you get to do is go through all of the necessary steps. You have to find closest living relatives. You have to determine whether or not person, if it was a first marriage or a second marriage, or if there are kids from previous marriages, or all those type of things, when you don't have a will, may end up going back and looking for common law marriages and, trying to figure all that out. Then you have to figure out how to split the percentages between all those different people, or maybe it's just one person. But you still have to go through the entire thing. You have to interface with the court all the time, and you have to figure all of that out. And that's just the will. Then we talked about what would happen with the power of attorney if you didn't have a power of attorney. And it took me about 2 minutes, and the guy says, so maybe I should sign this. I'm like, unless you dislike your child, by all means, we should go ahead and do this. So it's got me thinking about it. I'm like, so let's talk about what would happen if you were to die without a will. Now, I believe we have somewhere along there, we have a commercial that was done. So we're gonna play that commercial of what's the worst that can happen. So hold on.
So you haven't called Michael Bailey, the Mobile Estate Planner, yet. But really, what's the worst that could happen today? Well, first, you could die without a will. And then your wife and your kids and the rest of your family could fight over what you left behind. And then, because you didn't take a little time to make a plan, your estate gets lost in the court system. And then, after years of distrust, bickering, and arguments, when your family finally makes it to the hearing, a fist fight erupts over your assets, and your whole family, even your elderly Aunt Edna, gets arrested. Except for your wife, who gets hurt and falls into a coma, and now she needs experimental brain surgery. But all that money you set aside for a situation like this is tied up in the probate case. So now your family has to go to Mexico just so they can afford the doctors, except for Aunt Edna, who's broken out of jail and is on the lam somewhere in northern Canada. Now you get the point? All of this could happen because you didn't call Michael Bailey, the Mobile Estate Planner, while you still had a chance.
We are still looking for Aunt Edna, by the way. Last we saw, she had traveled up into the Yukon region, and I think she caught up with Calvin and Hobbes from the cartoon. And there, if you remember, Calvin and Hobbes used to like to run away to the Yukon. So they're apparently up there. I don't know if they're hunting bear or what they're doing. Maybe someday on those Discovery shows like Into the Wild or Life Below Zero or something. Or, sometime we'll come across them and be like, oh, hey, there they are. That's exciting. Or maybe they'll be the next people that we find on. We have discoveries of ancient folks. Like there's the Iceman, who was apparently buried in a glacier for however many years. Or, I was reading the John Krakauer book of Into Thin Air, about those who died on Everest, and sometimes there's an avalanche, or sometimes, you know, things will thaw and, oh, look, there's a body. I guess we found somebody who died. Cool. You know, so there's all sorts of different things there. But, I mean, you know, those are kind of the fanciful, little bit over the top type of scenarios. So what happens if you die without a will? Well, like I said, there is a Colorado intestate statute. Intestate statute's about 50 pages long. And you know, if you're on your first marriage and you only have kids from that marriage, looks pretty simple. Okay, we're going to go ahead and distribute everything to a spouse. Now, in the commercial, it said, you know, to your wife. So, you know, I have a wife. My wife does not have a wife. She has a husband. So if she has to give it to her wife, we're in a lot of trouble. You know, just because I'm married to her. And if she does have another wife, well, that's news to me. If you're listening, honey, you know, I don't think you have a wife, but, you know, if you do, then there's some sort of, you know, polyandry statute that's probably not going to be super happy.
I made another commercial that was aimed more towards the ladies.
Oh, though. Did you? Yeah. Do you have that one up?
Sure.
Ooh, let's listen to that one. Soon it will play.
So, you haven't called Michael Bailey, the mobile estate planner, yet. But really, what's the worst that could happen today? Well, first, you could die without a will. Then your husband and your kids could fight over what you left behind. And then, because you didn't take a little time to make a plan, all of your assets will get distributed evenly by the probate court. And because you didn't equally divide your car or your house or anything else that's important to you, everything will need to be sold at auction, and all of the things that your family was supposed to keep to remember you will be lost. Then a couple of years later, after your family has completely forgotten all about you, your youngest child accidentally finds something that reminds them that you were once their mother, and one of your kids will have total nervous breakdown while the other decides to move to Nepal and take a vow of silence, and this causes your husband to lose his mind and run away to South America and live out his days as a poor plantation worker. Well, you get the point. All of this could happen because you didn't call Michael Bailey.
Again, we're a little bit overdramatic there. Although, you know, if you're going to move to Nepal and take a vow of silence, that's cool. Although, as we learned from the great documentary 2012, which, you know, happened in 2012, even though it's 2017, when you take a vow of silence and, you know, it's the end of the world, apparently the monk has keys to a truck that will allow you to go to the giant archetype ships that will then not close all of the way until you smash into the side of Mount Everest. And then the day will be saved and everything will be happy. Oh, wait, did I spoil 2012? It wasn't all that great of a movie anyway. So, I mean, going back to what actually happens. So if you've got a very simple situation, it's just your spouse and kids all from the same marriage, cool. That's pretty simple. It'll go to your spouse. If you're the second to die, we'll split it up amongst your kids. Seems pretty straightforward, though, right? Well, but the problem is, if you don't have to have a will, you have to be going through all of the potential scenarios with the court, and you need to be telling them what all these potential scenarios are, and why they apply to you, and you know, you have to show that you've searched for other kids that aren't there. It's kind of hard to prove the absence of something. So if you're like, well, you know, well, we don't have any other kids. Oh, yeah, prove it. So do you have to, you know, DNA test the other 7 billion people on the planet to try and make sure that they're not your children? I mean, that seems a little excessive, and no, that's not required. But you've got a whole slew of things that you have to rule out, and it takes what could be a very simple administration of your will if you had one, and say, okay, well, everything goes to the spouse. Cool, just transfer the spouse, and that's all we need to court. Thanks a lot, we're done, and moving on. To a higher level. And so, I mean, people just love interacting with courts. They're just so happy to do this. They're like, yes, let's interact with the courts. We love going to court. It's so much fun. It's never intimidating. Usually they have nice carpet and nice chairs, but you don't necessarily want to go and hang out there. You know, we have other things to do with our lives. So if you rely on the intestate statute, you're probably going to end up in court more than you want to. So that's one of the first things that will happen if you don't do estate planning.
That was another commercial we made for you, the Picasso one. But he died 41 years ago. Mm-hmm. And this is what the thing that got me the most about that, doing the research for that particular one, mm-hmm. is they still are not settled. It's been 41 years. And yes, it's a vast amount of mm-hmm. priceless artwork and all sorts of jewels and stuff like that. There's a lot of money involved. But it's been 41 years, and they still haven't settled it.
Yeah, so
I think that's pretty crazy.
Most people aren't going to be able to go 41 years because you start paying attorneys, and attorneys will be more than happy to take all of the money out of the estate. you know, it's not that they're trying to suck the money out. It's just, you know, if you're having a fight over things and at $200-$300 an hour, then you end up with questions about things. So you are listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ The Source, also heard on 1220 AM, 95.3 FM, 100.7 FM, and online at 560thesource.com or on the TuneIn app. So if your situation is not simple, if your situation is not as easy as just one spouse and kids, you know, we'll talk about that in just a second. Got a caller. Hello, Joe. How are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
Good. So what's going on?
Good. Well, on the question about a trust and avoiding probate, is there such a thing as a bulletproof trust where a friend of mine's on the Western Slope and they're working through it and he's asking me how he should vet the people that are doing it. And I said, I don't know. And then he said, well, he pulled up a website that just said lawyers arrested for stealing estates. And he said it was like infinity. It was page after page, or, you know, now he's like all nervous about how you vet an actual somebody that's doing your will.
Okay. So, I mean, I've heard people call things a bulletproof trust. I'm not entirely sure what that term means. I've also heard people say that they want something that is an ironclad, which I think is a Hollywood made-up term, because if you create a trust is supposed to be a private document that then is administered privately. Upon the death of the trust maker, you end up registering that trust with the county where the person lived, because the fee for registering a trust is the exact same fee as it would be to open a probate estate, because the county's always going to get their money, right? Hard to stop the county and the government from getting their money. It just doesn't work. But, you know, I mean, I think the idea with a bulletproof trust or an ironclad trust is that it will hold up to whatever legal challenge or scrutiny might be brought. So in that sense, I suppose you can have a bulletproof trust in the sense that nobody will ever be able to challenge it. That doesn't exist because there is a trust, there's the ability to challenge it. Doesn't mean the person's going to win, but that's anything that you do can be challenged.
Is it the same as probate on a trust if it's brought into court that whenever the assets are the person, the estate's used to do the legal fees, or is it you have to bring up your own money That's when he was asking me, because he looked all these things up where, you know, these trusts were established or these people were in charge of the wills and estates, and they just absconded with them, basically.
Okay. And I suppose that does happen. So if you have legal challenges to a trust, the legal challenges will usually be heard in the probate court, because the probate court is the proper venue and forum to hear those challenges. It's not exactly the same procedure as a probate proceeding. There's definitely different differences in how it plays out, but the probate court is the proper place to hear that challenge. Now, as far as
juries and probate courts in Colorado, right?
What's that?
There's no juries. It's just between the judge and the lawyers. Or how does probate? Do they actually have, like? Could you ask for a jury in probate court, or is it just like the judge and the lawyers and the amongst themselves deciding how to do it?
So the probate proceedings that I have been involved in, and they are very minimal, it's like one or two, have been resolved by a settlement agreement between the two parties, and there was only a judge involved. As far as whether or not there are juries, I've never... I've not experienced a jury trial, and since I've only been in probate once or twice, I really couldn't tell you whether or not juries become involved in probate proceedings. I just don't know, because that's not where I work in that space.
Okay.
Yep.
So, but you have, like, so what should I tell him? Like I said, he's in Grand Junction, but is there a way to vet the person that's willing to write his trust right now for his family? They got like land over there with oil.
What do you mean?
He doesn't know how to go about, because he knows some people over here that went through some stuff that it got real convoluted, and then it was actually the two lawyers knew each other and all that. But anyway, he's trying to avoid that, so he's trying to vet the attorney that's doing it for him over there. And he's asking me what I think about it, and I said, I don't know. And so then he said somebody told him to Google lawyers arrested for stealing estates or lawyers jailed for stealing estates. And he said it was like a 22-page computer thing that just kept going. He just got tired of reading them. And now he's all nervous about how to vet the actual estate planner attorney over there.
Well, if you're going to go looking for examples of things that go wrong, you're going to scare yourself about anything. You want to scare yourself about driving, you can, you know, Google pictures of car accidents and deceased people there. If you want to Google pictures of children who have birth defects, you can be afraid to have children. If you want to Google examples of United States senators who did things that were unscrupulous, or presidents or kings or popes or whatever, you can find all of those out there. As far as, you know, the vetting process for an attorney, I mean, you look for a licensed attorney, look for one who has experience.
These are all licensed attorneys that were on there. I mean, it was different states. It wasn't just Colorado.
Okay, Joe, if you want to disagree with me and try and fight me on what I'm saying, please feel free, but realize that I'm not going to listen to it, okay? I mean, if you look for a licensed attorney, licensed attorneys by law are required to meet minimum standards. There are examples of those who don't do it. Look for somebody who's experienced. If you can find references, then you can do that. I mean, vetting an attorney is very similar to vetting any other sort of company that you work with. I can't endorse or not endorse any attorney who's out there who I don't know. So, I mean, there are those that I know. Most of them are here in the Denver area because this is where I practice. But if you're looking for a definitive list of how to vet an attorney, I can't give you one.
Okay. It was just a question if you had a process that you thought was better than another one. But I guess it's just, like you said, it's like looking up traffic accidents. You would never drive again. So,
right. So, I mean, you know, the process of how to pick an attorney, I mean, I usually tell people, I'm like, look for somebody you like. Look for somebody who you get along well with and that will be able to, they have to have technical skills. That's kind of the starting point. But, you know, look for somebody you get along well with, because otherwise that will end badly. That's kind of my thought.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Have a good day. All right. So where was I? That's right. The intestate statute, if your life is a little bit more complicated than just first marriage. And so so let's say that you have that you get married and then it doesn't work out. And then we have, so we get married, and then it doesn't work out. So then you marry somebody else. And your second spouse has children from a prior marriage. And then you die without a will or some sort of other estate. So if you go ahead, and in that case, so let's say, you know, there only a certain percentage is going to go to your spouse, because the children from another marriage are going to get another percent, a different percentage. And so if you don't have a will that says what you want to have happen, or a trust that says what you want to have happen, you're stuck in the default rules. And people who you may or may, you know, let's say that you are on a second marriage and you really don't like your stepchildren for whatever reason. You know, it's maybe it's a Cinderella type of situation where you have the wicked stepsisters who, you know, are going to treat you badly and make you take the ashes out of the fire. Or maybe it's, they just don't really, you know, they think that you as the new spouse are the gold digger who's just there to get money. Or maybe you just have a personality conflict. You don't get along with them. So is that who you want to leave money to? Well, if you don't, then you want to have an estate plan. Otherwise, you get stuck in the default rules. So you are listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ, The Source, also heard on 1220 AM. 95.3 FM, 100.7 FM, 560thesource.com, and on the TuneIn app. So what happens if you don't have a power of attorney? Let's say you don't have a power of attorney and somebody ends up in the hospital. You're like, okay, well, I'm going to go, and since I'm their relative, I mean, spouses you can get away with most of the time. You're like, oh, well, I'm a kid. So, you know, if my mom and dad were to be in a car accident, and I go up there, I'm like, well, I'm their son, so I get to make decisions, and I need to know this, and tell me what's going on with them. Well, the first thing that's going to happen is that we run into the HIPAA laws. And in the HIPAA laws, we say, well, we're not allowed to share private health information with somebody who's not authorized to receive that information. So doctors and nurses and other health professionals aren't able to discuss things like your private health information with somebody else. So now we've got, oh my gosh, well, you know, I'm the kid. You would think the kid would be able to get access to that information, but the law doesn't necessarily allow that. So then you've got kids who are like, well, you know, I need to be able to make decisions for them. Can't you just break the rules this one time? Well, nope, that doesn't work so well. Doctors and nurses and other health professionals, they're not super keen on they're not super keen on breaking the HIPAA laws and getting themselves in a lot of trouble. So we've got, all right, what are we going to do? You're kind of stuck. You know, if it's a long-term thing, then you can go to court and you can ask for a guardianship or a conservatorship. And that will allow you to make decisions for somebody else. But if it's just a short-term thing, let's say that, you know, somebody's in a car accident, they're knocked unconscious, so their, you know, their injuries are fairly, you know, intense. So, you know, let's say they've got, you know, a broken arm, a broken leg, several broken ribs, and some scrapes and some, you know, contusions, some lacerations, some cuts. And, you know, it's probably not a best idea to wake them up immediately and be like, oh, so you're in horrible pain. How should we take care of you? You know, that's not how we want things to go. It's just, it doesn't seem very nice. So we say, okay, well, we're going to keep them sedated for a couple of days. Well, and, you know, during that couple of days, there's probably decisions that need to be made on a medical type of basis. And if somebody is trying to make those decisions, but they don't have the proper authorization under a power of attorney, they're not allowed to. So, you know, you can try to run to court and get a guardianship or a conservatorship, a temporary one for those 3 days. But the courts have things to do. They have other people who are set up, and they have people who are not in a spot where, you know, so the courts are, you know, they usually have dockets that are set for the next, you know, at least a week, if not two or three. So if that's the case, it's hard to run to court and get something within a day or two. You know, emergency hearings don't happen like on the day of. It's just, you know, there is a time constraint there. So it's a much better idea to plan ahead, have powers of attorney in place so that when a crisis hits, you don't have that problem. All right. So I see that we have a caller, John. Are you there, John? Or not quite yet? No, we're still waiting for John. Never mind. Okay. John, are you there?
Yes.
Hey, what can I do for you, sir?
Well, been listening to your show.
Yep.
Very interesting. And my question was, if, let's say, how do you charge, or what do you charge to create a, I know my brother has a, what does he call it? He calls it a living trust kind of a thing,
mm-hmm.
where they put their assets in an entity, and then in the event that they, you know, expire or whatever, they don't have to go through the whole probate thing.
Right.
So, how do you, how does a person, what is something? I mean, what does that cost? Is it by the number of assets that you have, or the time that it takes, or the number of you know, people that are going to inherit it, or
so
how do you do that? That's all I was asking.
So I generally, and I can't speak for other people, but I generally charge based on the amount of work involved. So okay. If somebody comes to me and they're telling me about how they have a spouse and children and they just want to make sure that it doesn't go through probate and, you know, we're going to put everything in the trust so we avoid probate, but it's going to go to a spouse, if not to the spouse, or, you know, joint trust between the two of them and then to their kids in equal portions, that's a pretty simple thing to set up. So that's on the less expensive side of things. If, however, you come to me and you say, okay, well, I've got the same thing. I've got a wife and I've got two kids, but one of my kids is disabled and a special needs child and is receiving assistance from the state, so we need to set up a special needs trust as part of this trust.
Yeah, you know, that isn't an issue, right?
Right.
Okay, they call that a life estate? Is that what they call that?
No, a life estate is something different.
Okay.
So a
living trust and life estate, what's the difference? I'm sorry, I don't know.
A life estate is where you grant somebody the ability to occupy and use real property or land for the term of their life.
I see. Okay, yes. Okay, I got that.
Yeah, so it's just a slightly different thing.
Okay.
In answer to your original question about cost, a typical revocable living trust that I write is usually between about $1,500 and $2,500.
Perfect.
Yep.
Thank you for your time.
Right.
Appreciate it. I've learned a lot on your show. Thanks.
Cool. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Have a nice day.
Thanks for listening. You too. All right. Well, it was nice to talk to John. I hope I did get to answer his question and, you know, wasn't trying to, you know, avoid the original question. It just seemed like giving it a little bit of context seemed like a good idea. So I guess we can talk more about what happens if you don't do anything in the future. Thanks for listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey. As always, my direct line is 720-394-6887. Give me a call if you'd like to talk about your own situation and how we can get you taken care of. Otherwise, we will see you next week. John Rush and Rush to Reason are coming up next. So stay tuned to KLZ 560, and we'll go from there, and I'll talk to you next week. Thanks, and have a great day. Bye.
Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey will return to ATX next Wednesday at 2:30 here on KLZ 560, The Source. AM 560, FM 100.7, and online at 560thesource.com.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.